You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ball there by Myers, and not being able to get a stick on it was Seguin. Loosing toward the corner, Myers back to his skate, throws it around the boards on the near side for Enstrom. He's pressured there. Perreault comes back to help out. Now for Myers. Around the boards, they reverse. Hitman pass for Ehlers. Down the right wing wall. He will put it in toward the slot for Perreault. Moves and shoots. Score! Matthew Perreault coming in late. And he took it on the tape there from Ehlers. A little stop-up move. Separation gain. A wrist shot that beats Lehtinen. And we're tied at one.
Matthew Perreault scoring for the Winnipeg Jets on Thursday night in Dallas. Not quite enough for the Winnipeg Jets as they fall 2-1 to the Dallas Stars in a shootout to finish their five-game road trip with a 2-2-1 record. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Going to spend a lot of the show getting you set for tomorrow afternoon's return of Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian, as they will make their return to Winnipeg for the first time since the blockbuster trade last February. Claude Noel, former Winnipeg Jets head coach, joins us in 1 hour's time. Gentlemen, good morning to you both. The Jets, as I mentioned off the top, lose in Dallas 2-1 in a shootout, end the road trip with a 2-2-1 record. I thought they were the better of the two teams in the game in Dallas, and, you know, 2-2-1, 5 out of 10 points on the road trip. It's not good enough to get them right back into the, you know, on the cusp of a playoff spot, but yet it's not bad enough to knock them out completely. So we sort of continue with the status quo where the Winnipeg Jets, you know, are they a playoff contender? Are they a seller? You know, 7 weeks away now from the NHL trade deadline, and you still don't know what this team is.
Yeah, top of the morning to you, Drew and Richie. It's nice to see that Drew's already wearing his Adidas tracksuit in anticipation of tomorrow. I know
a few people are
going to be wearing tracksuits, but they're going to probably wait till tomorrow afternoon. But you've got it on right now, so that's awesome. But no, in all seriousness, the Jets picked up a huge point against the Stars, and I actually thought that they deserved better. And when you consider that the Dallas Stars don't lose very many games this year, and they are a good contender, a top contender, to win the President's Trophy this year, the Jets certainly aren't catching the Dallas Stars in the standings. They're 20 points behind the Stars at this point, but they played a very solid road game. Connor Hellebuck was excellent again. And, you know, that 4-on-3 power play in overtime, Drew, the Jets had a lot of good zone time, but they just couldn't not break sticks. So
I sure hope they have zone time on a 4-on-3 power play, Izzy.
Well, you know, that was certainly a good opportunity to take the extra point in overtime. And then, as we know, once it gets into the shootout, who cares who gets the extra point? It doesn't matter. I mean, Brian Little hits a post, and I mean, it's ridiculous. You guys know how I feel about the shootout. But needless to say, it was a very solid road game. And, you know, Drew, you mentioned they finished the road trip with a 500 record. Mm-hmm. They've been awful on the road. And I think for the Jets to beat the Nashville Predators, who embarrassed them 7-0 earlier in the season, I think this road trip really can have the potential to get the season going again. And sure, you know, you could look at it, Richie, from the perspective of what's the good news? Well, the good news is they're only 4 points behind the Predators and the Avalanche, who they're chasing, right?
Avalanche beat the Preds last night.
Right. Yeah. And they've been playing very well since starting off the season really very awfully. So you look at the Winnipeg Jets right now, and they're within striking distance of that wild card spot. But the problem is the other teams that are ahead of the Avalanche and Predators are way ahead of the Jets. So really they have to focus on these two teams, and they have the Predators coming up twice at home.
Yes.
And it's going to be tough, but the good news is if you don't come back from this road trip with a couple of wins five of a possible 10 points, then you don't even give yourself a chance. So the Jets do have a really good chance here with 9 games out of 10 at home coming up. They do have a chance. They're still in it. but you have to really make hay with these games coming up here, starting with Buffalo. You got to beat Buffalo. They're not a very good team, and you got to continue that. You probably got to win 6 or 7 at home to really put yourself in a good position in February.
Yeah, I mean, you leave town once before February 5th, the evening of February 5th, after playing the Hurricanes, unless you want to go on vacation for the All-Star break or you're Dustin Byfuglien, you go on the road once in a month, and you're going to Minnesota for a quick turnaround in and out. So there's no excuses. We talk about this all the time. You know, you always hear Paul Maurice say 3-4, 4-6. That's out the window. You are as comfortable as can be for a long period of time at home, and you're not playing that many good teams. You're playing the Coyotes, the Devils, the Sharks, the Sabres. I mean, it's all there sitting on a platter 4 points back to make a run. We'll see.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that. We'll go through the remainder now that we're at game 40, you know, tomorrow being game 42. We're officially halfway through the season. We'll go through the remainder of the Jets' schedule coming up next segment to see, you know, we calculate the Jets need about, you know, another 54 points to get them into a good position. We'll see if they can get to, you know, where do we think that they can get those 27 wins or whatever to get to the 54 points. But going back to the road trip, you know, you saw a rejigging of the lines.
Yeah.
You know, you saw, you know, Scheifele playing with, you saw Little and Wheeler playing with Stafford. You saw Perreault and Scheifele and Ehlers together. You saw Ladd and Lowry and Burmistrov together. What did you think of the lines that were deployed for the majority of the road trip?
I mean, let's not,
or at least Scheifele came back.
Kid ourselves, Drew. Let's not kid ourselves here. Connor Hellebuck was the key to the road trip. I mean, the Nashville game, you could argue the Nashville game, they were outplayed worse than they were in the 7-0 game.
I think in the first 10, 15 minutes, you could.
Well, they allowed 45 shots. Mm-hmm. I think they allowed 34 shots in the game. They lost 7-0. So, I mean, sure, they didn't even show up in that first period. But the point is, I mean, Connor Hellebuck was tremendous. Now, against Dallas, a game I didn't see, so I can't speak to personally. But obviously, from all accounts, they outplayed them. The Sharks game out, they played well. The Ducks game, they did not play well at all. Mm-hmm. So, overall, back to the line. I think, first off, I'm basing the success mostly on good backstop, good performance by the netminders. Obviously, Hutchinson struggled against Anaheim, giving them a chance to win for the course of the road trip. Okay, the lines, they're fine. I liked what I actually seen out of that Scheifele line. I don't think this is the lines that are going to be for the long term. I cannot see. Like, I don't have a huge issue with them, but I cannot see Andrew Ladd playing with Lowry and Burmistrov for a long period of time here. I don't see how that works.
And, Richie, Adam Lowry's not going to stay as the second-line center, right? I mean, yeah. Mark Scheifele, the reason why he's playing that third-line center role is because he's coming off of an injury, right? So Mark Scheifele will be the second-line center. So right now you can see what Paul Maurice is doing. He's kind of easing Mark Scheifele back into the lineup, right? And Adam Lowry and Alexander Burmistrov played very well with Andrew Ladd on that second line. Mm-hmm. And I think it started with that Arizona game, which obviously the Jets didn't get the result they wanted. But I think that the Jets really outplayed the Coyotes for the majority of that game. Mm-hmm. And I agree with Rich. I think for the Nashville game, they didn't bring their A game. But that's what happens sometimes in the NHL. That's what sometimes. I mean, Connor Hellebuck steals a game. But
that hasn't really happened a lot for this team.
No, and we really haven't seen it since last year with Michael Hutchinson, I think, in the midway point of the season, and Andre Pavlik towards the end of the season. Drew. But you look at the lines, and, you know, I mean, I agree with Rich. I didn't think that the Lowry line had its best game against Dallas, but certainly the Scheifele, Ehlers, Perreault line was very good. And you saw Ehlers even there in overtime, had a couple chances. And, I mean, that, you could argue, might even be a second line going forward. That was the Jets' second line at the beginning of the season, and then you saw Ehlers switch with Stafford, and Stafford moved up to the second line. So I agree with Richie. I think that you'll probably see some rejigging of the lines here going forward, but going into the game tomorrow afternoon, I don't know. They might stay with that. And
I think short-term they probably will, Ezzy. I think long-term I just don't see Ladd being a left winger with Lowry and Burmistrov. I just can't see that happening.
It's a losing bet to not assume that eventually Ladd will be back with Little and Wheeler, because it happens all the time. Yeah. Every time they think that they've, you know, been split up, they end up back together.
Well, they've been together for 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. You know, Lindy Ruff split up Sagan and Ben to start the game. You know, push comes to shove, you know, at the end of the game, he needed those guys back together.
Right. Right. Drew, how many times has Bruce Boudreau tried to split up Getzlaff and Perry?
Sure.
And then they always go back to Getzlaff and Perry because they play so well together. So I think that you're right guys that you're going to see probably Ladd go up to the top line, and then you might even see Lowry go down to the third line. Might be as early as this early in this homestand, because ideally Adam Lowry is your third line center. That was the role he played all
absolutely
of last year, and
absolutely
he did an excellent job. You got to give Adam Lowry credit as well. He's played very well since coming
for
back
sure
from
absolutely
his AHL stint.
Absolutely.
But you know, have they created enough offense after those first couple of games being together? I would say no.
Well, at least you got Ehlers with skill now. You needed that. Yes. I mean, he's going to be playing. You can't be playing him with guys who don't have enough skill.
That's right. And with Perreault and Scheifele, he's playing with guys who have skill. And, I mean, you saw the vision and everything with the pass to Perreault in the Dallas game, setting up the Jets' tying goal, the only goal the Jets scored. I mean, you know, this is a guy who needs – you can't play him with Thorburn. I mean, with all due respect to Chris Thorburn, he needs to be playing with guys who have skill, like you just said.
Even with Adam Lowry, the games are just so different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he's going to be creating off the rush, Lowry's not going to be the guy who's coming in off the rush and you're making plays with. I like playing with Scheifele as a rush player. I mean, he really has become a very good player off the rush. Exceptional shot, generates speed through the neutral zone, and certainly has proved his skating over time.
Yeah.
So I like that combination. You have the right-left shooting. I like Ehlers and Scheifele there.
Worth pointing out, we don't know the health status of Mark Scheifele. We saw at the end of the Dallas game where he was grimacing in pain on the bench after sort of falling awkwardly into the end boards.
He'll be in the lineup tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I would be surprised.
I would be surprised too, but you never know. The Jets will practice, I believe, at 11 a.m. this morning. So before we're off the air, we'll give you an update on as much as we can on Mark Scheifele's health.
I know that because I'm the new doctor of the Jets.
Oh, good.
So that's
really well.
That's
congratulations
why,
to you.
That's why I know that. But
good for you, man.
To Richie's point about you know that second
couldn't
line
get into law school. Apparently, we got into med school.
That second line of Adam Lowry, Andrew Ladd, and Alexander Burmistrov. Rich mentions that, you know, it has trouble creating offense, and I agree. And I think against Buffalo, Rich, you don't have to worry about it as much. Buffalo's not the best defensive team. We know that.
Yep.
But then you got Nashville twice next week at home. That's when you have to worry because, as we know, Nashville's defense is formidable, right? So then if you're in a situation, again, where you're not creating a lot of offense, which they didn't really when they played Nashville, yet they got the 2 points,
I mean,
then you're probably going to see them move Mark Scheifele up and then maybe move a few pieces around and in an attempt to make that line more successful. And then within that, you're probably going to see Ladd go back to the first line.
Well, Andrew Ladd, I'm taking, I guess, a bigger picture approach here. This is my opinion. If Andrew Ladd in a contract year is going to be playing the remainder of the season with, for example, with Lowry and Burmistrov, he will lose his mind.
He's out the door.
He will lose his mind. If you want to sign him and then play him with whoever, I don't really think it matters.
Sure.
But I just can't see a player in his contract year playing with two guys who are not Little and Wheeler, put it that way. I see that being an issue for the leader of the team.
And Richie, more importantly, he's the best left winger on the team.
He is.
And they need points, so he should be on the first line.
Well, I don't
regardless of the contract situation.
I'm not going to say an issue with the way it is right now, and I'm just saying long term, I can't see that being.
If by February 29th he's not back up with Little and Wheeler or with one of the two of them, you
or with Scheifele, you know, I'm just talking with the playmaking.
With skilled players.
Yes, with a more skilled player.
Sure.
Lowry's been, as he said, he's right. Lowry's been very good since his recall.
Absolutely. Let's look at the goaltending situation quickly. You have, obviously, Michael Hutchinson's continuing to struggle. You have Connor Hellebuck, who's playing outstanding. You have Andre Pavlik, who's back on the ice, hasn't faced any live action, hasn't faced any shots, so you still think he's at least a couple weeks away there. When he's back, do the Jets carry three goaltenders?
I mean, you know what, Drew? We speculate all we want about what will happen when these guys are back.
Sure.
First of all, we don't know, as you mentioned, we don't know when Pavlik's coming back. We don't know if there will be an injury before that. We don't know if there will be moves or trades. That's one of those things. Deal with it when it comes. I think we're too, the market seems too focused on that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Pavlik's rehabbing. Hellebuck's the guy. We'll see what happens in a couple weeks if he comes back, and then the Jets have to make a decision. You don't know if somebody gets injured before then. We don't know that. We don't know if there's a trade before then.
When does Hutchinson get another start?
I mean, the question there is he starting against Minnesota on Friday?
That's right. Does he start in that back-to-back situation next Thursday and then Friday in Minnesota?
And to Richie's point, if Hellebuck is playing well, then he gets the start, obviously, tomorrow against Buffalo, and then he gets the start on Tuesday against San Jose, and most likely Thursday against Nashville,
and then you
got to go with Hutchinson on Friday.
Hold on, but again, let's talk on Saturday, and I understand the question, Drew, but let's talk on Saturday, but who's playing on Friday? If Hellebuck lets in 6 goals, and it's likely on Thursday, we're not really going to be talking about it on Friday.
Sure, I understand what you're saying. Let's head... Sorry, yes, go ahead.
Well, I was just quickly before we go to break, Drew. I was gonna, you know, to Richie's point, I was going to say that with Pavlik might be back in 2 weeks. He might not be back until early February, and I think I would be in the camp that doesn't believe that the Jets are going to carry three goalies. It's very rare for an NHL team or any team to carry three goalies on their active roster. And if the decision comes down to keeping Hellebuck or Hutchinson, if you asked me a couple of weeks ago, I might have said Hellebuck goes back to the AHL. But the way he's playing, I don't think he can send him back.
But think about it. Fair, I agree with that, Ezzy. But the thing about it, and we're kind of getting into the question and didn't necessarily want to get into, but it's January 9th today?
Yeah.
January 9th. They don't go on the road, as we said, until February 5th or 6th. So if Pavlik were to come back before then, if you keep three goalies and you have to recall somebody from Manitoba, you're home anyways. Sure. I don't know where the Moose are, but you bring a guy back. And, I mean, if you're that concerned about it, maybe after the road trip or when they embark on a road trip and travel and all that, then there's more of a concern if the teams are in different spots. I haven't looked cross-referenced their schedules, but
I have.
The point is,
I haven't.
You know, you'll figure it out at that time.
Sure.
And
don't get too
ahead of yourself. One other point is the guys who are sitting out right now. It's not like they're going to be waiver claims.
So you can, yeah.
I'm not really, you know.
It's an issue to deal with.
The Jets have guys that are sitting out that are going to be claimed on waivers.
Sure. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the remainder of the Winnipeg Jets' schedule over the next 41 games and see if they can get the 54 points necessary to be a playoff team. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town after a stellar two-week set, Sean Lacumber. I'm reliably informed very few tickets remain. Check it out. RumorsComedyClub.com or call them 204-488-4520. Gentlemen, if the Winnipeg Jets were to get to 95 points, which is 54 points more than they currently have.
And also 4 points less than what would have been required to make the playoffs last year.
Correct. According to the good people at Sports Club Stats, they would have a 91.3% chance to be a playoff team. If they get to 91 points, which is 50 points from now, they would have a 54% chance of making the playoffs. Looking at the Jets' schedule for the remainder of the season, the next 41 games, it's not the most difficult schedule. I would say if you wanted to split them up into two halves, the first half of the season for the Winnipeg Jets was more difficult than the second half. You look down in terms of, you know, Central Division opponents, you only have the Blues once. You have the Blackhawks twice at home. You have the Predators and you have the Wild and, you know, you have the other Central Division teams. But for the most part, you probably expected to be competitive with those teams. Do you think the Jets can get the 54 points necessary, which you've done? You've looked through the entire schedule. Do you see a path to playoff success for this Winnipeg Jets team?
I went through the games and I probably was a little bit more liberal in giving them wins than losses, but I thought I was trying to be as fair-minded as I could.
Sure.
And I had them at, for the remaining 41 games, kind of a 25-16. Now, again, that doesn't include overtime losses and such, and they haven't had a lot of those this year, of course.
Right.
So, I mean, that's close there. You have to take care of business in a lot of the games, and you have to, you know, I have them in this case beating the Wild on the second half of a back-to-back, kind of splitting games against the Predators and things like that, winning one, losing one. So it's not going to be easy. I mean, looking at it, Drew, the losses I have for the Jets are all against, for the most part, pretty good teams.
Teams that are clearly better than the Jets.
Yeah, now, I mean, some of them, they're not necessarily better than the Jets, but look at it in the way of, you know, you play Detroit, you beat Detroit, you beat Boston, some of those being split, you winning one, losing one over the course of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But the schedule is not, as you mentioned, that difficult right now. I mean, when you go out in February, Drew, and you're only playing four games at home, that's hard.
Sure, especially for a team that has been pretty woeful on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. So this January schedule is where we talked about in the first segment, where you need to make some progress.
Well, 9 of your next 10, as you said, are at home.
but their March schedule is home weighted as well.
Yes, at home very significantly. In March, they pretty much play every second night. March is, you know, really one night on, one night off.
It's only four road games.
Right. Now, you obviously March won't matter if you don't take care of business in the next.
That's a good point.
10 games. Yeah. I think if you look at the next 10 games, you know, including the road trip to Minnesota, you look at the schedule, you know, the Jets, you'd expect them to beat the Sabres. You just beat the Sharks in San Jose mm-hmm. last week. You know, Nashville, you know, maybe you split the two games at home against Nashville, but you would also think that you could win both those games potentially. You almost
as well as you could lose both.
As well as you could lose both of them. Then you got the Devils at home and the Coyotes at home and the Hurricanes at home.
Like the Devils, Coyotes, and Hurricanes games, like I just have as wins. Like you can't lose those games.
You can't. I mean, you almost are looking at, for this to be a successful 10-game chunk right now, you're almost looking at something like 8-1-1.
But that's what Rick's talked about. Rick Ralph's talked about many times in terms of over a 10-game span, needing to push it to an 8-2, 8-1-1 kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. 6-4 isn't good right. enough. That's it's right. got to be one of those dominant 10-game stretches.
And Drew, with all the bonus points that you get nowadays, what team makes the playoffs and doesn't go on a run like that? Right? You have to have a run at some point like that in an 82-game season, especially when you have such a poor November like the Jets had, right? Mm-hmm. And if we could simplify it, Richie, to especially the next 10 games, the Jets have to be better in their own division. And you got the mm-hmm. Sabres and Sharks coming up, who are obviously not in their division. And then you've got five games coming up in the Central. You mentioned the Predators and Wild, Avalanche, Predators again. And, four games in a row, actually. But you have to win three of those games, in my opinion, just because of how poor you've been in the Central Division. What have they won, five games this year in the Central Division? They're 5-15, something like that. I mean, they've been really bad. And you've already lost the Avalanche twice this year.
4-10-1 versus the Central Division.
So
yeah, close enough, but yes.
Close enough. They've won four games.
Right.
You have to beat the Avalanche twice, not just once. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about the Predators, who they just beat but then lost to 7-0, and the Predators outplayed them in the game that they just recently won. But they've got to be better in their own division. And they've had a lot of back-to-back games, the Jets, in the first half of the season. They only have one back-to-back mm-hmm. here left in January, and that's, we already talked about that. It's the Predators next Thursday, followed up by the Wild on Friday on the road.
They only have one in February as well.
And then, Richie, you got the break at the end of January, mm-hmm. the All-Star break. So, I mean, the schedule, as you mentioned, it's not the hardest schedule. And, you know, you could play devil's advocate and say, as we just mentioned, okay, you've already lost to the Avalanche. You've already lost to the Predators. You've already lost to the Coyotes. But you should still win those games. Or you should definitely win those games if you want to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that's the position the Jets are in right now. They're playing catch-up. They've been playing catch-up. And the positive side of this is the Jets aren't that far off from where they were last year. I mean, the Jets were kind of seventh or eighth in the Western Conference last year, but the difference is how they got there, right? Last year, they started off poorly. This year, they started strong, and then they won in that terrible losing streak on the road in November, right? Mm-hmm. So the way they've got there is differently, but it's certainly within their grasp to make the playoffs this year, as Richie mentioned. I mean, you look at the schedule and you say, okay, well, the Jets, especially considering they've played better at home, I mean, they should win, I would say, yeah, 7 or 8 of these 10 home games.
Yeah, 11-5-1 on home so far this year. So yeah, this is where they've made their hay.
I don't disagree. You know, I think the issue, though, is we talk about Sabres, we talk about Sharks, and they should win these games. I mean, these are not those teams have skill. This league is so much parity now that those are not slam dunk games.
No, of course not. I mean, nobody, you know, should doesn't mean will, obviously. Yeah. I mean, these are all, there's caveats attached to it. But, you know, what I always say is at the beginning of the year, or really, you know, if you're looking, you know, if the Jets are sitting in the dressing room and they're looking at their upcoming schedule, the players, you know, themselves would say, probably, you know, they would never admit it publicly, but would say, these are games that we are the favorites in, that we should be the victor in at the end of the contest.
There are teams, you know, around them in their away, a lot of teams are the same. Anaheim with 41 points, Vancouver 41, Calgary 40, San Jose 38, and all that. Mm-hmm. But in reality, guys, I mean, the Jets are chasing two teams right now. Yeah. In that, I mean, it's not like Dallas, Chicago, St. Louis, Minnesota are going to fall back to the pack. As far as I'm concerned,
they're not catching.
So you're looking at that one spot.
It's one of Colorado, Nashville, or Winnipeg is going to be the fifth team out of the Central Division. I mean, you look at that. I mean, the other teams in the Pacific Division, you know, the Sharks and the Flames and the Ducks, they're all going to beat up on each other to get the second and third spots in the Pacific Division. It's almost, I mean, it's almost irrelevant. You're not going to see four teams come out of the Pacific Division and be playoff teams.
And to the Jets' credit, guys, I thought after losing the first two out of three road games, I thought that they responded really well. And maybe they didn't bring their A game mm-hmm. against Nashville, but they got the 2 points, especially against Dallas. I thought they really grinded out mm-hmm. a point in that game, right? And, you know, again, you go to overtime and shootout, and the point, it's a coin flip, right? But I thought that, especially considering that they've been so bad on the road, you could see that these guys knew what was at stake. They knew that they needed to at least get a point in that game against Dallas, because last time they played in that building, they got beat pretty bad. I know sure. the score was 5-3 or something like that, but it wasn't a very good defensive performance, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you let in only one goal in regulation against the Dallas Stars with Sagan and Ben and Patrick Sharp on his 11-game point streak and all that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought it was a really impressive road victory. So it's definitely within them. And nobody can look in their crystal ball and say that they know that the Jets are going to pull out seven or eight wins, out of those 10 home games, pardon me, 9 home games coming up.
Yeah.
But I mean, as Richie said, it's on a platter there for them to get back into this. And not just kind of be in the same position in February where they're 3 or 4 points out. No, like make up some points and get even with Nashville or Colorado.
You have to make your ground up now, not only because you have all these home games and you're not on the road for a long period of time, but because if you are sitting 4 to 5 points out at the end of February and haven't signed these players, they ought to go.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's we can't look at it as 4 months left. Or 3.5 months left.
It's 1 month.
3 months left, whatever it is. Yeah, it's 1 month. It's one, maybe 1.5.
Sure.
But you have to know.
You have to be.
You're making your run and you're getting into serious consideration. If you're hanging too far back.
You have to be above the playoff line by mid-February. Otherwise, you have to assume that Ladd and Byfuglien are, unless they get signed.
I'd say within 3 points. I don't disagree with you about your belief about being above the playoff line.
Yeah.
I can see that. I would guess that they would be within that. They would say the 3 points would be close enough.
You can't be, if you're within 3 points, you can't be 10th in the Western Conference. You have to be, you have to be ahead of Colorado, let's say, and only 3 points behind Nashville.
So we can't look at it as an overwhelming schedule, sure. I mean, because this team might change.
Sure.
And look at Nashville's already changed. I mean, sure, they got beat last night. I don't think anybody here saw the game. Johansson gets 2 points.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to get that production offensively
scores
now.
Scores on his first shot as a member of the Nashville Predators. And you look at the problem for the Jets is as well, and this is going way ahead of yourselves. You look at their last three games in April at Anaheim, at San Jose, and at Los Angeles. Three difficult games. Yeah. If you have to, get wins there to be a playoff team, you hope you take care of business almost before that.
Yeah, it might be possible. One thing we should note is that it looks like
LA will be home and dry at that point in time. Let's head to break. When we come back, Bill Hoppe is going to join us. We'll talk about the Sabres, do a game preview ahead of tomorrow afternoon's Jets Sabres game. Shortly after 9:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And your home for Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Bill Hoppe. Bill is the Buffalo Sabres beat writer for the Times-Herald. You can also read his work at buffalohockeybeat.com. Bill, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure as always, Bill. Brought you on to talk about the Sabres ahead of their visit to Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon. You look at the Sabres, and I think everybody knew that they were going to be, nobody expected them to be a real playoff contender this year. But they're 29th in the league. Is there disappointment in the Buffalo organization that they are still sort of in the, right at the bottom of the NHL standings, or were expectations a little bit higher with, Eichel coming in with a full season with Kane and Bogosian and, with Dan Bylsma as the new head coach there?
Oh, there's definitely a disappointment. I think they thought they had made the stride that would get them out of the league's basement and could have them maybe hanging around for a playoff spot this year. Maybe not make it, but just hanging around, being the league's 19th or 20th team or in that area, not 29th. And they've fallen apart here recently. And it's amazing because it's not dynamic. They're so much better than they were last year. They're almost like a real team again. They're competitive. They can outshoot teams. They can play a system, but they still can't win. They still can't score goals, and it's very odd. It shows how bad they were last year, but it also shows how far they have to go to play with the big boys in the league. And no one really thought they would contend for a lottery pick again. And here we are, it's January, and it looks like they're going to be in the lottery. In the mix for a top three pick or four pick again here.
Bill, obviously this is an emotional game. It's going to be an emotional game tomorrow afternoon here in Winnipeg with, as I mentioned, Kane and Bogosian making their return since last February's blockbuster trade. Is there sort of an extra hype around the game in Buffalo as well? Or, you know, from the distance between Buffalo and Winnipeg, is it sort of just another game that the Sabres are going to play on their schedule?
I don't know if there's a lot of hype around it. Fans are definitely aware that Evander Kane's going back to Winnipeg for the first time, and it could be kind of a crazy atmosphere. For his part, Evander's kind of he's downplayed it. I think that's probably the right thing for him to do at this time. Maybe he'll say something different today or tomorrow, but he's kind of said the things you expect. It'll be a fun time and this and that. But definitely, it could be a wild game tomorrow, and I think fans here will tune in.
Bill, all three of us here have gotten a chance to see Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian play a little bit, but you've gotten to see them play on a nightly basis, and all Jets fans really want to know how they're doing, even though, you know, there might be a little bit of animosity, especially towards former number nine for the Winnipeg Jets. But in your opinion, you know, stats aside, how have Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian fit into this Buffalo Sabres team?
They fit in very well. They're stars. I've seen two very popular teammates. Back in October, Evander Kane chartered a helicopter and a couple of guys, I think it was Carlo Koliakov or Jamie McGinn, they went up to a Toronto playoff game, Blue Jays playoff game. Zach Bogosian, just one of the guys, too. He's become a DJ here. So they fit in very well, and Dan Bylsma mentioned how well Evander fit in the other day. I think whatever happened in Winnipeg hasn't happened here for Evander Kane.
Bill, do the Sabres fans, like, as a whole, you know, kind of talking about how they're fitting in thus far, do the Sabres fans, like, do they think this was a solid trade for Buffalo, or are they happy with this trade? Like, Jets fans seem to be pretty happy with the trade overall. Is there also, you know, satisfaction from on the Buffalo end, or do they think that they lost the trade a bit?
I think Sabres fans still like the trade. I think they wanted to get rid of Drew Stafford, and everyone knew he was going to go. They were kind of sick of Tyler Myers, even though he had gotten back, in my opinion, pretty close to his old form. Joel Armia, I don't think they cared about him too much. And it was something new for them. It was for them to get a young 30-goal scorer and a young defenseman, two number three picks or whatever they were. So, yeah, I think fans liked the trade just because it was something new. And who won the trade so far? I mean, probably Winnipeg, I guess. But I think you're going to need years to judge it.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Bill Hoppe, who covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Times-Herald. You can also read his work at buffalohockeybeat.com. Bill, you know, as we mentioned sort of earlier, you know, the issues about Evander Kane in the Winnipeg dressing room have been well documented while he was a member of the Winnipeg Jets. You know, why has he fit in so well with the Sabres dressing room, if he has, or do you hear rumblings similar that he may be a little bit of a outcast from the core of the team?
No, I think he fits in from what I've seen. I think there's a lot of young guys his age, similar backgrounds, big prospects, high expectations, and maybe you can relate to some of those guys. And I think there's a lot of strong veterans like Brian Gianta, Matt Molson, some of those guys who like him. So I think it's a good dynamic for him. I think he fits in.
Bill, Zach Bogosian, of course, is from the upstate New York area, and I know when he was here, he was certainly a fan amongst the ladies, but as far as his play on and off the ice, how have the fans in Buffalo responded to Bogo?
I think they like him, and he came in just for one of the big reasons, I think, is because he's different than Tyler Myers, that they kind of grown sick of Tyler Myers, but he was good last year. He played a lot of minutes. You could see why he was such a high pick. He was physical. He zoomed all over the ice. And this year, the second or third day of training camp, he got hurt, and we think he pulled his hamstring or something, and he missed the first six weeks of the regular season. And he just hasn't been the same this year. The jump's missing. He seems like he's not hitting as much. There's just something's missing there. It's showing up, because if he's the player he was last year, the Sabres would probably have a couple more wins.
Bill, Dan Bylsma, a different kind of coach certainly than the coaches that have been in Buffalo recently, like Ted Nolan. More, I think, attention to detail probably be a fair statement, and more systems-based. How has he performed in his first year?
I think he's actually, I know they're 29th place, but I think he's done pretty well, I think, in some regards. I think he's changed the standard. I think he's implemented systems. I think guys like him and trust playing for him. And I still think, I know they're in 29th place, but I still think he's the right guy for the team. It's going to take some time, and I think players have really responded to him. It might not show up in the standings, but check back in a year or so.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Bill Hoppe, discussing the Buffalo Sabres. Bill covers the team for the Times-Herald newspaper. Bill, wanted to ask you about Jack Eichel. We know that he was obviously the second overall pick, probably would have been the first overall in most years. 26 points in his rookie season in 41 games played. You know, what makes him so dynamic? What makes his ceiling so high? You know, how has he looked in his first NHL season?
Well, I mean, number one, his skating is just off the charts. You'll see it tomorrow. You see it every time he steps on the ice. He's just an unbelievable skater. It's really, really fun to watch, because there aren't very many guys in the league like that. He's been pretty good so far. I mean, I think some people thought he would step into the league and be a 40-goal scorer, and that's not going to happen right away. But recently, he's gone to a different level. He is, I don't know, 12 points maybe since right before Christmas. And he's been maybe their best player. He's just, other than Ryan O'Reilly, he's just, you can see that he's going to be a difference maker. And he's really morphed into maybe their second best forward behind Ryan O'Reilly.
Bill, you just mentioned Ryan O'Reilly, and he's obviously leading the team in points right now. He's got 35 points in 41 games. That was obviously a huge acquisition for the Buffalo Sabres at the draft, making that trade with the Colorado Avalanche. What have you seen out of Ryan O'Reilly that you like, and why has he been so successful so early? Because last year he struggled at times with Colorado.
Well, I think he's thriving because he wanted this opportunity. He got the opportunity to be a number one center, and it's what he's wanted his whole career, and he's not going to let it slip away. And he's been fantastic. He really has. He's the Sabres' best all-around forward, in my opinion, since Chris Drury. And obviously, you knew he was pretty good coming from Colorado. You hear how he's good in every facet of the game, really. But until you see it up close, you really don't appreciate it. And he does everything well. I mean, he takes face-offs. I mean, he's constantly on the ice taking face-offs. No one's taken more face-offs in the league. He makes the players around him better. He can score goals. He can kill penalties. He just thinks the game on a different level. And he's been terrific. He really has. He's their MVP. And I don't know where they'd be without him, because a lot of times he's the only guy who can score. So if they're 29th with him, I mean, they might be 30th by a mile without him.
Final question for you, Bill. You know, a lot of talk here in Winnipeg about pending status, free agent-wise, restricted free agent-wise, of Jacob Trouba and Mark Scheifele. You know, Rasmus Ristolainen's had a really strong year in Buffalo, and kind of seems like the team chose him over Nikita Zadorov, who was traded in the O'Reilly deal. He's putting up some big numbers. Is there any talk at all about, like, what the expectation is for the Sabres in terms of maybe trying to lock him up long-term or more of a bridge deal?
There hasn't really, but they're going to have to pay him. I mean, either way, I think he's quietly been one of the better defensemen in the league. He's struggled a little bit recently, but, I mean, he plays like 25 minutes a night. He might have 50 points. He has two penalty minutes, even though he's played in every situation against the opposition's best. He's that good, and they would probably be wise just to lock him up for a long time because, I mean, you don't want him to get away.
Bill Hoppe covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Times-Herald. You can also read his work at buffalohockeybeat.com. Bill, always appreciate your time, and thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Take care, Bill. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll do our own Jets-Sabres preview. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Bill Hoppe, Buffalo Sabres beat writer, for joining us. Still to come in about 13 minutes' time at the top of the second hour, former Winnipeg Jets head coach Claude Noel joins us to talk about Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian ahead of their return to Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. The Jets and the Sabres tomorrow afternoon. There's actually going to be a hockey game played in addition to the sideshow of the return of Kane and Bogosian.
It's good. I'm happy that there's a sideshow. It gives this game a little more intrigue. It's Otherwise, true. It'd be Buffalo with some young talent, but overall pretty bad team against the Jets. The team is out of the playoffs.
That's right.
It's good to have some theater around it.
Absolutely. And you got to get some excitement over the course of the 82-game schedule. For a lot of people, this was the first game chosen.
You been outside today?
Yeah, it's pretty cold. This is the first game chosen for a lot of people in their ticket drafts at the beginning of the year and everything else. So it should be an exciting atmosphere at MTS Center. We'll talk about all that in the second hour of the show. But, you know, as we mentioned, I mean, the Buffalo Sabres are not a very good team. You know, 28th in goals for, they can't really score. 20th in goals against, they give up a fair number of goals. And you would have actually thought they might give up more goals because their number one goaltender at the start of the year has been out of the lineup since, oh, God knows. I mean, Robin Lehner went out really early in the season. I think he's scheduled to come back sometime relatively shortly. But, you know, it's been Chad Johnson and Linus Ullmark who've been carrying the load in goal for the Sabres. You know, the Jets, I guess, you know, it's sort of surprising that the Sabres don't have a better offense than they do, given, you know, O'Reilly and Eichel and Evander Kane is supposed to be a goal scorer.
Well, you mentioned Evander Kane and Ryan O'Reilly, two players who they brought in. Well, Kane, of course, was last year, but Ryan O'Reilly was at the draft. And, you know, especially Evander Kane has not provided the offense that they were expecting, 8 goals in 31 games. But you can go up and down the list. I mean, have you seen Matt Molson play this year? I mean, I think he's on the ice, but he's got 4 goals in 40 games. I mean, he's been awful. I mean, he's making big money, Richie, Matt Molson. Mm-hmm. And so you can go up and down the list, and, you know, the Buffalo Sabres are a little bit top-heavy at this point, and I realize Tyler Ennis has had some injury problems this year.
They miss him a lot.
Well, he's one of their top players and has been for many years, right, Rich? But, you know, Jack Eichel has provided some offense in his rookie season, but... You know, this Buffalo Sabres team has many problems. And, you know, you mentioned Robin Lehner, who was brought over from Ottawa, is injured right now, and they just don't have good enough backup goaltending, Drew, to steal games for them on a nightly basis. But they just don't have enough offense as well. And, you know, you look at the Buffalo Sabres the last couple of years, they were at 52 points, 54 points. You could only go up from there, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They were 30th in the NHL in power play last year. They were 30th in the NHL in penalty killing. I mean, that's why they got the second overall pick. They should have got the first overall pick. Mm-hmm. But they were the worst team in the league, so you could only go up. And, you know, they're still at the bottom of the Eastern Conference standings, but they're getting better. But there was too many what-ifs, in my opinion, for this team to make the playoffs this year. So for the Winnipeg Jets, you don't have to necessarily worry about shutting down one or two lines necessarily like you would against some of the other top teams like Dallas or Chicago. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Ryan O'Reilly's a good player, but he's not a dominant player. I mean, he's more of a playmaker. He's got a good shot, but he's probably a little bit more of a playmaker. So for this Jets game coming up tomorrow afternoon, I mean, the Jets are going to line up their top pairing against the Ryan O'Reilly line. And, you know, I mean, this is a game that you got to win, right? And, you know, Richie mentioned a couple of segments ago, this Buffalo Sabres team has a lot of skill, but they just don't overwhelm you. And you don't have to worry about this team hurting you on special teams, even though the power play is actually top 10 in the league.
It's 8th overall in the league. So that's about the only thing that if the Jets get into...
I don't know how it's top 10 in the league, but...
If the Jets get into their habit of taking too many penalties, the Sabres power play can bite the Jets in the behind.
I mean... The Buffalo Sabres aren't a good team, and by that I mean 1 through 18, and they're net mining going to come at you and dominate night after night, but they have enough skill to win games. And it's not like the team that they put out there last year that was tanking as much as possible for Connor McDavid. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at their first line, Ryan O'Reilly, Evander Kane, and Sam Reinhart. There is skill there. There's a mix of talent there. Do they miss Tyler Ennis? For sure. I mean, there's no question about that. And you look at the other part of the roster, there are guys who, you know, they're long in the tooth. Brian Gionta, David Legwand, you know, guys who...
Their best days are behind
them. Yeah, the best days are behind them. And then you look at the defense, and we've talked about it in the season preview show. It's no surprise. You got Bogosian, Ristolainen, and Cody Franzen on the right side. You're pretty solid. You're pretty solid there. Your left side is terrible, and that's no surprise. And we knew that going into the season. If you're going to go out with Jake McCabe and Josh Georges and Mike Weber, well, then you better expect to be pretty shoddy on the left side, and they are. So what do you expect the Jets to do tomorrow? Well, the Jets are going to want to use their speed and get it on the forecheck, and what they're going to do is put that puck into the left corner. They're going to put that puck into where those guys are. Make Weber and Georges and get back on the puck and make plays and transition. And that's what I think you're going to see the Jets with a key. I think you're going to see Byfuglien and Trouba lined up against that number one line. And the Jets will take their chances with the other three. And I know Eichel can be a quick strike guy, and you'll probably see him play against Tyler Myers and Tobias Enstrom, take away his space. But then you're taking your chances on the other lines, and I don't think the Jets are overly concerned about, as he mentioned, you know, Legwand and Molson and Gionta. And those guys, you'll take your chances, you know, with whichever pairing it's going to be, or the third pairing with some support or an offensive zone draw. So the problem is the Sabres, the roster they have coming in here tomorrow aren't overly deep. They aren't deep, and they're lacking on the left side. And you mentioned the goaltending. Chad Johnson's done an admirable job in replacing Robin Leonard, but he's not that guy.
No,
and
so he's been a career backup.
Yeah. So you know, one thing you have to make sure when you play against Dan Bylsma's team is that you're ready for set plays. You're ready for set plays off the draw. You're ready for set plays on the neutral zone, and you're playing an aware game. He's smart. He makes sure his team has things built in, and you know, this game is important to Jets fans. It'll be very important to the Jets room. You'll see an emotional game tomorrow, I think, without question. That doesn't mean you also won't see an emotional game from Buffalo. You know, there'll be some cash on the board, I'd expect, in that room. And, you know, you play for your teammates, and that's why it should be such a spirited affair. But the Jets should win the game tomorrow. It won't be easy. This is not the Buffalo team of last year, but they should win.
I think, Richie, you make a good point when you talk about the speed. I think, you know, this Buffalo Sabres team, even though, you know, there is quite a bit of talent on this team, you know, the Jets showed that against the Dallas Stars, who are one of the fastest teams in the league, that they can really exploit that. And, you know, that starts with the Blake Wheeler, Brian Little line and continues with the Mark Scheifele and Matthew Perreault line, which is the third line right now. And maybe the Andrew Ladd, Adam Lowry, Burmistrov line isn't the fastest line. But this Buffalo Sabres team, you know, I echo what Richie said about the defense. You know, even though Josh Georges is, you know, your solid kind of stay-at-home defenseman at this point in his career, this defense can be taken advantage, I think, exploited. And you got to be physical with this group, too. The Buffalo Sabres can play that physical game, especially with Kane and Bogosian now on the Sabres.
Sure.
But it is a team that isn't as talented overall as the Jets, and especially in goal right now. And it's a team that's vulnerable. They've lost five games in a row. Mm-hmm. They were playing better hockey at the beginning of the season, the Buffalo Sabres, but, you know, they've fallen off a little bit. You know, they couldn't afford for their number one goaltender to go down. So I think another important part of this
game. Robin Leonard's played one game this year.
Another important part of this game, and I imagine both coaches are going to be telling their team this, I think especially Paul Maurice, because the game's at home, is to keep your emotions in check and not let that get the better of you, because this Jets team, regardless of what's going on off the ice with, you know, the track suits, there's going to be a lot of signs, there's going to be a lot of cheering and jeering, probably cheering for Bogo and jeering for Evander Kane. But you're going to have to make sure that at the end of the day you take care of business on ice, because they need the 2 points, right?
Sure.
So all of that aside, I know people are clamoring to see, you know, someone drop the gloves with Kane, whether it's Buff or whether it's Ladd or Wheeler. I mean, that if that happens, that should be a natural part of the game, right? That shouldn't be something that you try to get out of the way early on in the game. I mean, the Jets, if they play the way they can play, they should beat the Sabres team. I mean, if you're putting up the Jets against the Sabres in a 7-game series, the Jets are going to win that series. Sure, on any given night, the Sabres can win against the Winnipeg Jets, and that you can say that for any team. You can say that for the Oilers or, you know, some of the other bad teams in the league, the Blue Jackets, whoever you want to say. So the Jets have to make sure they keep their emotions in check. But yeah, this is a game that they should win 5-on-5, and if it gets to the special teams, you know, regardless if Buffalo has the 8th ranked power play. I don't think that's going to really factor into this game unless the Jets start running around and taking too many penalties.
You get special teams, the Jets have been awful.
Yeah.
So I don't. If you're Jets, you don't want to get to go special teams.
If the Jets play the majority of this game at 5-on-5, they should be the victor.
Yeah, but you could say that every game this season.
Of course, you could. I agree, and that's been their problem. I mean, they were better against Dallas. How many penalties did they take against Dallas? A couple? Two? Something like that.
That was two or three.
Yeah, it was a small number, a much more reasonable number. But, you know, I think Ezzie makes a good point about the emotion about it. You know, the players. And I think
that. And there will, Drew, there, sorry to cut you off, there will be emotion. I mean,
everyone
likes to think that, you know, some of these players are not, you know, exactly, not thinking about the fact that they're going to be lining up against their ex-teammates. They think about that. And Andrew Ladd and especially some of the veteran players who've played with Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian since they came over from Atlanta, I mean, they know. And they're going to try to keep him in check. They definitely don't want Evander Kane or Zach Bogosian to burn them in their home rink, right? So, I mean, there will be emotions, but you just got to make sure that that doesn't become the storyline.
Absolutely. I mean, if the win is the most important thing for the Jets tomorrow, and that's on Paul Maurice. Probably starting today, telling his guys that, you know, I understand that there's a lot of emotion around this game. I mean, Paul Maurice has emotion, you know, when it comes to this game too. But it's their job.
Maurice has emotion.
For a coach. It's a special game for him too. I'm sure it is. So it's their job to make sure that their emotions are kept in check. Because if they start running around like crazies, that'll be what ends up costing them a victory potentially. And they got to keep their emotions in check. Let's head to break. When we come back, former Winnipeg Jets head coach Claude Noel joins us to talk about Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for Saturday, the 9th of January. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and your home for Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Claude Noel. Claude, of course, is best known as the former Winnipeg Jets head coach. He currently is a pro scout for the New Jersey Devils. Claude, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, fellas. How are we doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Claude?
Good. Really good.
That's good. Obviously, you know, wanted to bring you on this morning to talk about the big return to Winnipeg of both Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian. You are as familiar with those two players as anybody else. But before we get to that, you know, have you kept close tabs on this Winnipeg Jets team since your departure from Winnipeg? Or is it just now one of 29 other teams that you follow as part of your duties as a New Jersey Devils pro scout?
You know what, I think you're always connected with the teams you're associated with, so it'd be hard not to follow them. You know, you have an affiliation and relationships with people there. So, no, I followed them, and, you know, it's hard at first. I think it's just the way it is with when you get released from a team. It's difficult. You watch it with all kinds of emotion and stuff, and so I've gotten way over that, you know, and now I'm doing pro scouting for Western pro scouting for the Jersey Devils. And so I've managed to see them play, which is part of my schedule, which I make up my schedule, but they've played against a few of my teams. So I've got a chance to see them. I saw them in Arizona. I saw them in Dallas the other night. So, but you know, the quarter's been cut, as we say. And so, you know, it's good to watch them because you know the players and you see how far they've come or, you know, how they've either regressed or how they're doing in their careers, and there's always interest there.
Claude, as you know, tomorrow afternoon is a huge game here in Winnipeg with the return of Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian. With Evander Kane specifically, why do you think he's been such a lightning rod for criticism really throughout his career?
Boy, you guys don't stop throwing those things at me. You know, first of all, I think he was a young guy when he came to Winnipeg. Coming from Atlanta, it would have been a major adjustment. So, and there was a lot of attention. And, you know, I don't know that, don't know that the relationship started on the right foot too much, you know. But you have to look at some of the things that he did. He certainly produced pretty well. He scored 30 goals in Winnipeg, I think his first year there. So, excuse me, I think as a young player, I think that there's some things that got created that were covered in the press, and some of them over this new world of Twitter that there was a lot of speculation on a lot of things off ice. Something was brought on, you know, possibly by him in the lockout year. There were some difficult things that got posted that were brought on. So I think there's a lot of different factors, but I think in Winnipeg, you know, you have to understand that market, and I think that's something that he went through and saw that, well, this is a different deal than Atlanta. It certainly was a lot different. And, you know, there was always some controversy around Evander, but he did have some really good performances there.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Claude Noel is our guest. Claude, it, you know, to the surprise of really nobody here in Winnipeg, it's come to light that Evander Kane had been requesting a trade away from the Jets organization each and every offseason. You know, when training camp would begin and he would still be a member of the team, he would still be in the dressing room, did you feel as though his presence was a distraction at all, given that it was clear he didn't want to be a member of the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, I think the first thing is that I don't know that anybody was aware of that, really, other than, well, maybe speculation. But even then, I don't know that me as a coach or we as a group in the locker room were aware of that. I think that was more between management upstairs and either Evander and his people or whatever, and it pretty much stayed there. When I was there, I don't know that it was really a distraction. I don't think that it was something that we concerned ourselves with. You know, I think it may have came to light, you know, after I left. And even then, I think players or professionals, they focus on the task. That some people have different issues that they want to, they don't want to be in a certain situation. You look at the situation with Drouin in Tampa mm-hmm. Bay, and he wants to play, and, you know, what's the risk, Stamkos, you know, what's happening there, or is it media-driven? But in my experience there, it wasn't the factor, because we really weren't aware of it. I mean, there was a little bit of speculation, but you just don't go there. I mean, you got to be careful you don't get caught up in the media frenzy attention, and you're trying to decipher. I remember, especially for us, when we got the team, at first there was so much activity every day on Twitter and things that I wasn't too connected with from a media standpoint or just the internet standpoint, and just things that had happened. And did he get hurt? Was he hurt? How come he's hurt? How did this happen? There was a situation in town at a bar or something, and you're like, well, is it real? Is it not? You try to do your own investigations, and after a while, it's just you just focus on doing the job and focus on running your team. There's enough to do there without having to get into what you know, a speculation and those things. So you know, so for me, it was a really good experience dealing with both those players, and I enjoyed my time with both those guys.
You know, Claude, it's interesting. I just want to ask you. You talk about Twitter, you know, you've coached for a long time now, and usually if you're coaching a team and there is media surrounding the team, you'd ask, well, at least in the past, you'd answer questions, or the players would answer questions, and they go about their day, and there really wouldn't be other news about them. How, you know, in terms of coaching, how has that changed for you when the media obligations of the players are done? They're still able to communicate with the public through Twitter and different means. Does that make it more of an all around the day and clock job for you?
Oh my God. It's a different animal for sure. Like, you know, it's something that you have to try to control a bit, and you can't really control it too much. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. you know, we made players aware of the things that you can get into off the ice, and you see it everywhere, but it's just, I was telling somebody last week that, my job coaching in Canada, I've probably spent 2 hours of every day, and maybe probably three of every day, just dealing with media stuff mm-hmm. without the regular coaching stuff. So It might even been more than that. Just I would spend possibly 2 hours of my time just going over, for my own sake, and just for media questions so you're prepared, just standings, what's going on in the league, what about this video, this guy got hurt last night in a check, what do you think? So you're prepared, just so you're always staying ahead of it, and you're always on top of it. And as you say, with Twitter, it's when they leave the rink, there's still stuff going, but it's not like we're not connected. We're connected. And we, meaning the staff upstairs, downstairs, we know what's going on. We know what's being said. Mm-hmm. We're very well informed. It's very well organized with the Jets as far as, you know, the communication between the people upstairs that deal with that, the media people up there that deal with that, in giving us information so that we're prepared before we get to the media. Thank God, because you would get stuff from left field that'd be like, what? So it's very well organized, but still, you can be as organized as you want. There's still things that come out from left field, and you can't. The challenge really becomes to keep your team focused and keep you focused. And the other thing is at the end of the day, if it's negative information or press, it becomes a distraction, and you're trying to keep your team in a focus. You can call it singular focus if you want on the practice or the game or this and that. But these things have an effect on relationships and have an effect on the, you know, on other people around your families, potentially on your team and stuff. So there's always this cloud going over if there's a lot of stuff, a lot of activity. And in my time there was a fair bit of it, you know, and some of it was surrounding Evander, but that's the way it goes. A lot of that was newness, and, you know, but it's something you just have to learn how to deal with. And you learn as you go along. I follow Twitter now just on my teams here that I cover, so I have an idea what's going on, but I'm certainly not involved in tweeting with anybody. I stay out of it. I'm just kind of a bystander.
So that means you don't want to share your Twitter handle with the rest of us right now?
As far as I know, there is no handle. Yeah. I don't even know how it works. I mean, somebody helped me set it up. I'm like, I just want to look from afar. I don't want to be, I'm not tweeting anything. Trust me.
Probably a better decision. Claude Doelle is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290.
Claude, there's a lot of talk now around town and on this show and different shows about Andrew Ladd and Dustin Bufflin and their contract status. But, you know, just from afar, you know, a little bit closer than afar, I guess, as we are, both of those two players, cup champions, are believed to be leaders and perceived to be leaders in the room. We're assuming that's the case. So can you kind of give us a look at as to, like, how do those two players lead? Because we're led to believe they're pretty different in their approach to leading the Jets, maybe on the ice and off the ice.
Well, they are different. They're different personalities. You know, Buff is a very easygoing, more of a jovial guy that keeps the group loose, and there's a big part that plays a big part in a lot of teams. It loosens things up in a lot of ways, and he can be serious, you know, when he needs to be. And obviously he's matured, and I've watched him play. He's played quite well. His game has come around pretty good. Mm-hmm. Andrew Ladd is more of a serious guy that leads through his play, and I think both are good leaders. And you have to remember that on a team, you know, there's maybe some more dominant personalities. Everybody has their leadership qualities in them. So it's not a one or two man, or it's not just a C and an A and an A. Those people aren't the only people that lead on teams. And with the Jets right now, it's quite a bit of a change from when I was there. There's quite a few new players. So it's hard to say where that whole thing will go with those two players because, you know, but the one thing with Winnipeg and the Jets is I have a lot of respect for the management people there, and the ownership are fabulous. And they know the direction. It's a tough business, and it's a tough thing. You've got to deal with two unrestricted guys. So, you know, their impact, certainly, they have a big impact on the team, and they've earned it, and they've had success, and they do a really good job there. I don't know where it's going to go. That's something that up for discussion. I'm sure it's been a big topic there and will continue to be until something breaks loose.
Yeah, it has been close. How do you, as a coach, you know, from your perspective and how you'd approach it, how do you try and avoid that becoming a distraction, not only for the players, but, you know, the players are all friends with each other for the most part and affecting their teammates as well?
I don't think that. I think you can't get involved in the it's part of the noise, but you can't get involved, and it's hard not to because people always ask you questions mm-hmm. about it and relate certain things to other things that always bring it up. But you as a coach just try to, and same with the players. The players understand it's just part of the business. Players are very good at focusing on the task at hand and focusing on the game and blocking out the noise. They don't, a lot of them don't read, don't get involved in it, and you really can't. It's not something that you debate. It's not something you talk too much about. I can't speak for what the players talk about, but I would assume that they don't spend a lot of time discussing that stuff. They're involved in being a team and trying to figure out how to be a good team member, and they focus on the next opponent, and they focus on the things they can control and not get wrapped up so much in the noise, because there can be a lot of it, especially in Canada. It's pretty wild.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Claude Noel.
Claude, you know, Pascal Vincent, you're obviously familiar with him. He's been an assistant coach since the Jets came over from Atlanta, but a lot of fans don't know as much about him. Maybe that's because he's not as in media as much as the head coach is, certainly, but what can you tell us about Pascal and his approach to coaching the game?
You know what, he's a sharp young guy. I'll give you a little background. When I first started there, I was trying to get a staff together, and I was hired Charlie Huddy as the first guy hired as an assistant coach there. And then I was looking at different people, and I talked to Chevy and Zinger and Larry, the staff upstairs, and tried to figure out what we would do as far as another staff member. And they thought, well, maybe we would look at up-and-coming coaches. And he was a very good up-and-coming coach that was just getting ingrained in Hockey Canada in the summertime there, and he had to cancel that. And he was a successful head coach in junior hockey in the Quebec League. So I interviewed, I can't remember what it was, three or four young guys are up-and-coming, and I think Pascal and I had really good chemistry, and I really liked him. He's a very passionate young guy, very in tune with the game and the new parts of the game. He's very a very good student, pays attention, very personable, easy guy to get along with, and I think he's very well liked by the players. Fairly quiet, but he's nobody's fool. He's a smart coach. I see him as being a good head coach again at some point. I don't know when that's going to happen. He has a young family, and so these things always come into play when you're coaching, because that's a little bit of a different animal, this coaching carousel. But he's a very good, smart teacher, good communicator, and I think he's very well liked there in Winnipeg. I find it hard to believe that the players wouldn't, even a few players wouldn't care for him. He's a very well liked guy there in the room.
You know, Chloe, you look at special teams, and coaches seem to get a lot of blame, credit sometimes, blame most of the time for the performance of special teams, power play, and penalty kill. And just looking over the power play production of your squads over the first 2.5-3 years when you were here, and since you've left, the production when you were here was probably looks like a tad better than it has been since you left, and the players are mostly the same. Do you ever look back and say, hey, maybe I got a little bit too much blame for the players that I had and the production that we had?
No, I don't think that way. You do what you do. You try to. You can't believe how much you dig into those areas. I mean, you know, Pascal was responsible for the power play, but you oversee it, and you work with him and with the players. But you can't believe how much work coaches do. I mean, in regards to special teams and how organized and how much you coach those situations, you lay the groundwork and you prepare the players and you do all this studying of your own group and trying to figure out, you know, what works, what doesn't work, and do we have the right personnel and the right positions, the right setup, the right breakout. It's just endless, and it's so. you know how thorough you are, and mm-hmm. and you know how much you're coaching to the players about all this stuff. At the end of the day, it becomes about some things. I mean, some things are out of your hands. When the players step on the ice and are presented with different situations, it's hockey. It's decisions that get made in an instant, and they have to make the right decisions and execute the right plays. And if your group isn't poised with the puck, isn't patient at certain times, isn't quite, you don't have maybe the quarterback you'd like to have, or you don't have the guy that can finish, then the numbers sometimes indicate that. But a lot of those things, too, are cyclical. You go through periods of time where you've scored nine straight games, and you go through times where you haven't mm-hmm. scored in 10. And so it's like, well, what's all of a sudden happened? Well, it's just the way that the game and mm-hmm. the way sports go. I mean, you put in a lot of time there. And for me, I don't look back and say, boy, I wish we would have did this and did that. You try things for the right reasons, and the right reasons are you're putting the people in the right spots, and you think that they are for the same benefit. You're all trying to win, so you do it for the right reasons, and winning is always the end result that you're doing everything for. So you're certainly investing, and the players are investing. It's not like they don't want to score or they don't want to kill the penalty. It's just part of the game, and that's the beauty of hockey. Hockey is a game that intertwines and it moves, and it's not a stop and go sport. You have to teach guidelines. At the end of the day, you have to make decisions as a player on the ice. You have to, and you help coach these guys in making these decisions. When you see this, look for this. When you see this, you should go there. But it's not black and white. You still have to allow creativity in there. So it's all good, but I don't look back and say, geez, I wish we could have been 20% rather than 15. Mm-hmm. If only I had put Charlie Huddy on the point on the power play.
Claude, just a couple more questions for you, and we really do appreciate your time on this Saturday sure. morning. Damian Cox reported earlier this week that Zach Bogosian also requested a trade out of Winnipeg, and this is much less well-known than the drama surrounding Evander Kane. Did you get the impression that there wasn't enough ice time to go around when the Jets had Bufflin, Trouba, and Bogosian patrolling the right side of the defense?
No, I would see that. I wouldn't think that. I think that when you look back at both Zach and with Evander, I think that if they did request a trade, I don't think it was for the lack of ice time or the lack of opportunity. I think if you look back, I mean, there were games where I played Evander 28 minutes, I think, mm-hmm. on the top part of the scale, and other times where I might have played him 18 or 20, but I think between both those players, I think that they're on ice. What was given to them at the time was given to them because it was felt that they could help us win, just like you do with any player. But I don't think that it had really anything to do, and I can't speak for them, but I don't think it had anything to do with the ice time or the competition or one guy's getting more than this and that. I think that it might have been I can't speak for them, so it would be even silly for me to speculate. A lot of that stuff is just a combination of different factors, and I wasn't there when they both left, so I can't mm-hmm. speak to what their objective was there.
Claude, we've got one final question for you, and to echo what Drew said, we really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah,
and getting a bunch of texts from friends that are listening to the interview, and a lot of people in
Winnipeg. You have friends?
Yeah, exactly. I have one friend, but a lot of people in Winnipeg are happy to hear you on the radio because you are very missed here in the city. What's your favorite memory from your time in coaching in Winnipeg?
Oh, there's so many. There really is. I remember opening night. Well, it's hard to forget because my family was down, and it's hard to forget that you're I coached previous to that a little bit in Columbus for a little bit of time, but to be in a Canadian market in Winnipeg especially, I have a lot of love for Winnipeg because to me it's a great place. But there's so many memories like you can't. The opening night was something else. Like mm-hmm. it's just to be in that building and to be standing behind the bench and remembering Johnny Oduya feeding that free pizza up the middle of the ice that Cam Larry picked off and fired it off. That's embedded in my mind. So I can't get past that moment. We lost that game. I think it was 5-1. But yeah. There's so many of them. Like, what I really love about about Winnipeg. There's a lot, because to me, it's the same. It's the passion there. And there's signs all over the building, but it is fueled by passion. And the people, when you go in a game there, and that's what I remember the most of anything, was the electricity in the building. And I try to explain this to people when I'm in other buildings that have really never seen a game there. When you sit in a game in Winnipeg, there's an electricity in that building and a passion that you feel about the game. People are there to watch the game, and they watch the game. There's 15,000 coaches in every seat, and they watch it, and they pay attention to everything that's going on. You go to games in a lot of other buildings, there's a lot of noise. There's after every whistle, there's music, and it's pounding here and there, and there's, you know, dancing girls and stuff. In Winnipeg, the focus is the game, and I find that to be the best. Like, for example, what I find the best fun is how coordinated the fans get to what they want to create, whether it's through Twitter or whatever world that you guys all live in up there. But they get together, and remember when Solani came into town the first game? I mean, that was another thing, you know. And then they boo, and they you know, and then they have their own chants and stuff. And so I can't imagine what this game's going to be like. What is it, tomorrow, you guys?
Tomorrow afternoon, yeah.
Yeah, tomorrow, yeah. I can't imagine what's going to happen in that game. I thought, oh, boy, this could be unbelievable. But that's what I like, the coordinated love for the game and the passion that the people in Winnipeg really portray. I think it's great. I mean, people say, yeah, we have trouble getting players to go there. Yeah, I think there will be a time where players will go there, and I think if you get the ones that want to play there and the ones that do, you know that they've got passion because they want to be in a place where hockey's important, and it's important there, and it's great. It was great. I love my time there.
Claude Noel, the former Winnipeg Jets head coach. Claude, I think I can speak for everybody in Winnipeg that the indelible mark you left on the city as the first head coach of the Jets 2.0 will never be forgotten. We really do appreciate your time this morning, and all the best to you as you continue with your duties with the Devils. And thanks again for joining us this morning.
Hey, thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. Good luck to you guys, and good luck tomorrow in that game. I know there'll be a lot of passion and anxiety there. It may be the odd sign as well. I'll be watching it on TV.
Well, all there right, you go. Thanks very much, Claude. Take care of yourself.
All right, guys. You too.
Take Bye-bye. Care. It's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.